listening to New England Public Radio News. I'm Adam Frenier, and this is the shortlist NEPR's Week in Review. And joining us today, Rick Hurst, publisher of An African American Point of View, and Chris Collins, columnist with the Greenfield Recorder. Welcome to you both.
It's good to be here.
Hi there.
This week, Springfield Police Commissioner John Barbieri left the job amid fresh accusations of police brutality and several officers facing both state and federal criminal charges. Mayor Dominic Sarno termed Barbieri's retirement as a mutually accepted decision.
This is a new beginning for our police department and an opportunity to improve upon procedures and programs.
39-year department veteran Cheryl Claproot has been installed as interim commissioner. Rick, let's first start with Barbieri's departure. It certainly has been a stormy time surrounding the police department. Your thoughts on his leaving the post?
Well, to be frank with you, I think it's about time. I think that he should have never been put in, and I think that the mayor would have been wiser if he had done a national search, and I hope that that's what's going to happen soon.
Chris, the city council has twice in recent years tried to bring back a police commission, and many councilors renewed that call today. Sarno has said that would go against the city charter and has refused to appoint members to it. Is a police commission something Springfield needs right now?
I think any kind of oversight is important. I think having people and regular people involved in the process is. But I think if it's against the charter, you got to change the charter. I mean, you can't just arbitrarily make decisions like that. Although when I hear the words mutually exclusive, is that what you said?
Mutually accepted.
Accepted. I mean, that's code for he had to go. And I think Rick is right. There's certainly enough anecdotal evidence recently to indicate that things aren't going very well in that department.
And we should note here, Rick, for full disclosure, that your son Justin is the city council president. And meanwhile, let's move north and head to Greenfield and check on what's going on there. There's been controversy over a compromise the council president struck, or floated, I should say, that would loosen some development regulations in exchange for votes to build a new library. That got the attention of some who are concerned about large-scale commercial development there. And there also seems to be quite a mayoral race brewing. Chris, fill us in. You've written about this recently.
Well, the mayoral race, I mean, it's going to be an open seat because the mayor's, I don't believe, running for re-election. This whole development for the library swap is so unnecessary. I think that all it does is resurrect a lot of bad feelings that have still been simmering below the surface. And that library, you're never going to have a better look at getting a library affordably than you are this one. So nothing ever gets done easily in Greenfield. Let's put it that way. It's one of the reasons why I have a job.
And Rick, what about this notion of lawmakers, in this case, town councilors, compromising to try to get something done? Isn't that how politics is played?
That is how politics is played. And I don't have any problem with compromises. But I mean, I think there's a big thing up in that area of the country about big boxes and all that stuff. So, I mean, I understand people's preferences. We wouldn't have that same fight down here.
Chris, just to circle back, why is a new library so controversial in Greenfield?
Because I think there are people in Greenfield that believe that the town has borrowed enough money on big ticket stuff and that this is extravagant. It's over the top. It's a huge building. It's $20 million, but people forget that half of that's going to be paid for by a library grant from the state that's never going to come around again. And they can fit this project into the existing debt structure without doing an override or a debt exclusion. I don't see in that scenario why you would even think twice about it.
And speaking of compromises, this week the State Gaming Commission voted to allow its lawyers to pursue a settlement of a lawsuit that surrounded the Eastern Massachusetts Casino Project. Former casino mogul Steve Wynn sued the commission amid an investigation into whether Wynn's former company is still suitable to hold the license for that casino, which is being built in Everett. That's after sexual misconduct allegations against Steve Wynn came to light. Rick, clearing up the lawsuit will allow the results of that investigation to become public, and then there'll also be a hearing, but is there really any chance the Gaming Commission's going to stop this project that's supposed to open in June?
Probably about 0.000%. It sounds to me that the maneuvering to open that casino under Wynn, under not the name, but under the Wynn organization, I don't know. I'm not so certain that we're going to see the results completely. I think when, if he made a decision, he made a decision that means that he won't have to, they won't be able to reveal his sexual misadventures.
Should Wynn Rick have the right to run that casino? Should that company have the right to do it?
I think they should. I just don't have a big deal. I don't feel that anything negative about them jumping in and running it. I think Wynn should suffer some punishment, and Wynn himself, and he has. He's divested himself of all his interest, and he's been quite embarrassed. I wouldn't even have a problem if he suffered some legal problems. But the casino being run by the Wynn business, I have no problem with that.
Well, I mean, the question becomes, is being an alleged scumbag disqualify you from being able to run a casino? There are many indications that the Wynn casinos are relatively successful. So why would this be a factor? And I think that this idea of releasing information, I think it's cosmetic. I think it's to be able to put this to bed and greenlight that project.
Of course, Wynn is alleged to be a rapist at this point of the legal proceedings. And finally this week, let's move on to Connecticut, where the new governor there, Ned Lamont, changed his mind about tolls, saying he's proposing them for both cars and trucks. Now, during his campaign, Lamont said he'd only support tolls on trucks, but now says that wouldn't make the state enough money for transportation projects. Chris, Lamont has been on this job for just about 2 months, and now he's proposing something that some voters certainly aren't going to like. Is this a politically dangerous move?
I'm not 2 months into a term, I don't think. I think in 4 years or whenever he runs for re-election, they're probably going to let him know about it. But when you just join in, I mean, it's sort of like, you know, promising not to raise taxes, then getting in office and raising taxes. It's like, you know, your perspective changes once you get into the office. However, the idea of let's toll one type of vehicle and not another, it's ridiculous. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. It should be all or nothing.
Now, Rick, let's say you're getting ready to drive to Hartford in a couple of years. Any chance there's going to be a toll booth or a toll electronic tolling equipment, perhaps in like Enfield, maybe on 91?
I would think so. I mean, I don't have a problem with that approach to raising funds for infrastructure. I don't have a problem with it at all. I do think that it is ridiculous to toll trucks and not the cars. And Connecticut, believe me, needs the money.
All right, Chris Collins of the Greenfield Recorder and Rick Hurst of an African-American Point of View, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
And thank you, our loyal listeners of The Shortlist, NEPR's Week in Review. And remember, you can catch us at any time wherever you get your podcasts or at nepr.net/podcast hub. Also, listen to Beacon Hill and 5, our weekly check-in at the Massachusetts State House. I'm Adam Frenier, and this is New England Public Radio.